This recording is a production of Anabaptist Financial. More recordings are available on our website at www.afweb.org under the Resources menu or by calling 800-653-9817. This presentation was recorded at a business seminar held on February 19, 2026 in Belle Rive, Illinois.
Good afternoon. Not sure how I drew the short straw to try to keep you awake after such a good meal, but we'll do our best, especially with legal documents. Who doesn't love legal documents? Writing things up, paperwork, don't we all just, that get our blood pressure up? Yeah, maybe it does. Some of us enjoy it more than others, and I've learned to enjoy it. Not because I'm naturally tended that way, but I do enjoy legal documents, and so I will tend to tell you what I have learned through my time dealing with the family business and partnerships and dealing with contracts. And so Nathan asked me if I'm a lawyer. Well, the answer is an emphatic no, I'm not a lawyer. So any things you can glean from here are worth exactly what you pay me for that as zero. So don't take that to the bank, but we will endeavor to learn things. So first, for our discussion here this afternoon, what is an effective agreement? What do you consider an effective agreement? That's an intentional title, and it has different meanings for different people. I'm sure if you go to business school, they will teach you that to be an effective businessman, you have to stand up for yourself, you have to stand up for your rights. We are Christ followers here today, and we will look at that later. So an effective agreement, I've heard that statement quite a number of times. When both parties feel taken advantage of, it's the best agreement. Is that how you feel about an effective agreement? Am I trying to slide things in that don't get noticed, and then maybe I can exercise that in an agreement later on? That's the world's way of doing it. We've heard about used car salesmen, the used car salesman that if I want three of these things, I'm going to put six things into the contract, and hopefully I'll get and wind up with two or three of them, and the others will slide through, and we'll be able to have an agreement that is advantageous to me. And what can I get out of this? Those are common themes for worldly people, for the business world, and if you do much business in the secular world and the banking world, you will find out that those and more are very common. Those are very common things that you're going to come up against as you deal with other people. I'm going to spend quite a bit of time in the partnership part of this, because I think we're talking about partnerships here, some of those partnership things. So what is an effective agreement to the child of God? The verse for that is, be kindly affectioned one to another with brotherly love, in honor preferring one another, not slothful in business, fervent in spirit, serving the Lord. What does that mean? In honor preferring one another. Does that mean that once you are, I've pushed you as far as you can go, and we get to sign the paper? Is that preferring one another? Is that the scriptural application of that? I believe not. From the Christian's perspective, an effective agreement is one where all parties win. We're not talking about this is a one party win, the other party loses. If both parties can't win, then it's not a good agreement. And there's no reason that you and I sign it. I would not want to sign that. An effective agreement deters conflict. It's not about standing for your rights. It's about being clear, being concise about what is the agreement? What are we talking about? What is the win-win for both of us here? And then it deters conflict. And then, in the event of conflict, if and when conflict does happen, an effective agreement resolves that conflict. I will talk more about that later. It is a perfect agreement, in my opinion, is one that once you've signed the contract, it goes into the file cabinet and you never see it again. That is the best one. It isn't always possible. What agreements will a company need? Well, there are a lot of agreements that a company needs, a lot of things that we have done. But for the discussion today, I'm going to focus on three. It's the basic LLC agreement that we have. And for this first discussion, I'm primarily talking about partnerships. If you're in partnership with a brother or a father or somebody else, I'm going to talk about how those business agreements should be, how I've found the most effective way to have those structured. And then in the later on, proposals and bids as we relate to the customers, the agreements that we make with them, and then the vendor, the contracts for your projects or for the supplies that you need to have. Those are the three areas I'm going to be talking about. However, that is just kind of scratching the surface. I couldn't talk about everything in 44 minutes that I get. So a couple more that you should think about that these principles will apply to are employee agreements. When you have, especially executive employees, that you should have an employee agreement. If you're leasing property, those will be agreements. Subcontracts, if you have subcontracting work out, or if you have private loans, and maybe that's another whole can of worms. You know, you talked about right before lunch the basic things that Anabaptist Financial does in checking out to make sure that you're making a good loan. So those are the last four there that I said are not. I'm not going to be touching on those. These three are what we'll be using the topic for today. Why does every partnership need written agreements? We're brothers. We understand each other. This is my dad or whatever it is. We know each other. We always work things out, don't we? Well, that may not be safe. That may not be the something that is fair. You are agreeing right now. So let's put it on paper. Let's get that to where we understand. Verbal agreements may differ. Can mean different things to different people and at different times. Times change. The company changes. Your personal situations change. Then what? What happens then? Well, that's what you need agreements for, so that we can go back and we can reference, what did we agree to? What was fair then? I hear these words too many times, I'll take care of you, or we'll treat you fairly. Those are relative terms that change value. The company value increases. We'll talk about that as well. But there are so many things that are relative, and they mean something to you. And once it comes time to square up with that, then, well, you told me you'd take care of me. Well, I'll give you $10,000. Well, no, that's not fair. Well, we should have resolved that before we got here. So that's why we need agreements. I'll start with this, the operating agreement. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on the legal part of this. Like I said, I'm not a lawyer. There will be a lot of legal terminology in your LLC operating agreement. Do you need an attorney to help you? Absolutely, you need an attorney to help you. Be careful how you select that attorney. Get somebody that you can trust. Get somebody that does what you ask them to do, not the other way around. Attorneys and non-resistance usually don't go together. So be careful. Be careful who you choose to be your attorney. That attorney is probably not going to be non-resistant, but they need to understand and respect your position and your position of honesty. And so find an attorney that you can trust, that can help you, and then stick to that attorney if you can. So we don't jump a lot of attorneys back and forth. How do you structure that operating agreement? Well, if it's your brothers or if it's whoever it is, you have different personalities. You have different things that contribute to the whole of the business. Somebody is good on sales. Somebody may be good on operations. Somebody may be good at accounting, whatever that is. There are different things that contribute. Make sure that you put that in the agreement. get a true hierarchy set up in the agreement to where you have an understanding of those roles that maximize the contribution that each partner can give. It can create confusion when these are not in place, because there again, if there is input from all partners, obviously, that's how the business needs to operate. But there's ultimately, in a certain segment, there's responsibility. You're responsible to make this happen. If it doesn't happen, then we know where the buck stops. So craft that operating agreement, and that way of how the operations of the company is going to be in a way that's conducive to your partnership, whatever that is. And there again, it's no better time to do it than at the start, whenever you're all sitting together and agreeing with this. Later on, when the one partner thinks the other one's not doing his part or he's not fulfilling his duties, then we don't know what his duties were, and how do you hold accountability to that? This is a stockholders agreement. This is what we called ours in our company. I know there's other business plans maybe, or things that other people have. This is not a part. It is referenced to in the LLC agreement, but it is a standard document in its own that takes what gets defined in the LLC agreement. It takes it a lot further, and it takes and breaks it down what is required of each person. Why do you need one of these? Well, again, the business and its demands changes. Sometimes when my father and my brother started the company, it was exactly that, my father and my brothers. And so as the 20 plus years went by, it was no longer just my father and my brothers. So we had a lot of other people. So the business changes. I changed in those 20 years. I was a young unmarried man like the rest of us were, and by the time we're now, I'm married with 6 children. My personal input has changed because I have other things. We need to define, what is that? Personal dynamics change. In a partnership, the third bullet point, in a partnership, partners contribute to different aspects of the business. We talked about that a little bit. What if somebody has something else going on? What if the church calls you to the mission? What happens? What if? What if you simply, in spite of trying to work together, you just can't get along anymore, and you're better off not being a partner? That's a real possibility. That's not the most important thing. For you to be a business partner is not the most important thing. For you to be Christians and to be family members that get along, that's much more important. Don't let this get in the way of that. That's why you need a written agreement. That's why you need a stockholders agreement or its equivalent. I think that was a double up there. I'm going the wrong way. That's why. Sorry. Back in 2007, we opened the company in 2001. In 2007, we were established as a corporation, and the CPA that set us up, I can credit those words to him. And that is why we opened the stockholders agreement. He said, you are all agreeing now, but if and when you are not, you have more important things to focus on. We were all brothers, and he told us that when and if that happens, you're going to need to be focusing on your relationships, and we need to establish what will happen with the company, what will happen, how you're going to get paid, how you're going to value those things. I'm going to skip to the last bullet point there. When you're in those situations, you need to be careful. I will come to those situations as a biased person. You think you're probably pretty much the middle of the road. Well, I think so too, but that might change depending on which side of the fence I'm on. So when everything is neutral and you're setting up this company, you're setting up this operating agreement, I don't know if I'm going to be the buy side or if I'm going to be the sell side. It's going to be the best time to work this out. What's fair for me, whether side, whichever side I'm going to be on. That's why you need to have have this stockholders agreement in place early on. So the way we structured our stockholders agreement is that it has a list of things that are called triggering events. And that means this is what happens. This is the minimum requirement. This is where what you need to contribute to be a part of this organization. Obviously, you need to be a part of the organization. Anybody can voluntarily leave if they choose to do so. We chose that we didn't want to have any non-active stockholders. Ironically, that's changed now. This was our original agreement. If there's legal trouble, if there is death, incapacitation, and then the last one is if simply the majority of the stockholders or the owners of the majority of the stock agree that this is just not working together, that there a minority can be requested to liquidate shares. What happens then? Let's say one of these triggering events has happened. And again, as I'm going through this, I'm simply telling you that I think you need to consider these items. I don't know what fits your business. I don't know what fits your family. I'm not here to give bad business advice. I'm here to stimulate your thinking more than anything else. Then here's where the many times the contention comes into place. What is the business worth? That is a big question. So you've worked for 20 years, and what is the business worth? Is it worth the balance sheet value? Is it worth the hard assets depreciated value, plus accounts receivable, okay, minus accounts payable? Those types of things have come into the balance sheet. Is that it? But you say this is now an operating business. It's going to make a lot of money in the next 5 years. I've helped to get it here. Think about that. How are you going to value it? There are a lot of ways to value that business. I was very instrumental in the last 15 years to get it to here. We've got these lucrative contracts that are going to get filled, and now I need to sell out, and I'm not going to get any value for that, right? Well, think about it. How are you going to value that? There are other multiples that you can put in place that are hard to go through right now. I'm sure Nathan could tell you those types of things, multiples of EBITDA and those types of things that you can put in place that give a business value based on historical performance. So think about those things. How are you going to value it? And then how are you going to get paid? You may have a business that has got some substantial value, and there may be a 20% partner that needs to get paid. And that partner has got, maybe that partner wants the money to go do other ventures, rightfully so. So define that. Define that in this stockholders agreement. How's it going to get valued? And how are you going to get paid? What is required? How is it valued? And how's it going to get paid? Those are the main points of the stockholders agreement. So if you're here today and you have a partner, I hope you get along. I heartfelt hope you do get along. And I hope that you put a stockholders agreement or its equivalent in place while you are getting along. And I hope you never need to even look at the stockholders agreement. But if you do, it'll be valuable to have it in place. In our time, as I said, in 2007, we established the company, and we had about five different stock exchanges throughout the last 25 years. And we always referred to the stockholders agreement and how to deal with those things. And I can say that it was not perfect, but it did help the heartache as we went through those things. It helped guide us through. It helped answer questions so that in the heat of the moment, you're not needing to. Those times can be contentious, okay? They can be high stress. They can be contentious. You don't need to be talking about these things. As the accountant said, take care of this while you're all agreeing, because later on you're going to have other things to focus on. That means your relationship with God. It means your relationship with your partner, who may be now your ex-partner, but that's okay. Work on that relationship. Don't argue over these things. These are not the most important things. I'll move on over to the bids and proposals part. We heard this morning about the advertising, and so I'm not going to go into that. The verse for this is provide things honest in the sight of all men. As you're putting your bids and proposals together, I know Mr. Horst back here, he's all about the advertising and showing and the truth in advertising, all just amazing, and I'm not going to get into that. But as you put your proposals together, listen to the customer and don't get carried away. This is not about you or your business. This is about fixing the customer's problem. It's about the vibe. You have to understand what that customer is wanting, and then you are there to fix that problem. That's what it's about. And in another, I guess, operating agreement that we had, not an operating agreement, but an SOP for the salespeople, I had that stated in that several times, is that don't go in there and talk about you. That's not what it's about. Salesmen like doing that. And go in there and talk about them and listen. Listen. They will tell you what they want. They will tell you what you need to do to close that deal. If you just shut up and listen, they will tell you 99% of the time. So just listen, walk your way through, and then put that in a very clear and concise way in a document. Be clear on what you are including and excluding. Have a section in there we always thank them for the opportunity to bid. We gave a scope of work, and then we had provided by the owner, provided by us, the contractor, and then there was a provision section down at the bottom. What could go wrong? Where could you get a misconception? Where could you possibly have conflict? What could they think is included that is not included? And just put some bullet points in there to cover that. Resolve those questions as you go through putting your proposals together, and be professional. Let Horst take care of your signs and your proposals, maybe, and they put some things in there that are applicable to what you're bidding. But don't go off on a tangent about how your company is the greatest, because it may not be, maybe to you. Don't forget, this is not about your company. It's about solving some need that the customer has. So focus on that. So put your proposals together in a way that are focused on taking care of the customer's problems. They will most of the time they will tell you what it takes for you to close that deal. And so if there are drawings or something that need to go with that, put those together, whatever it takes them to be meaningful. Customer and vendor contracts. Let's assume that you are now successful with this proposal, this bid, and then you get a 50-page contract from them that you need to go through, that you need to execute to do this contract. If it'd be possible, as much as lieth in you, live peaceably with all men. Here again, have an attorney look at this, especially if it is a large contract with the indemnification languages in. Have them look through that and make sure that those are in line and you're able to take the stand behind those. Evaluate the risks. You will take on risks in doing this work. Everybody wants to mitigate all the risk and wants to not be responsible for almost anything. And so it's easy to redline a contract and redline it to death, and nobody's going to execute that contract. So be realistic. You're obviously taking risks by doing this contract. Some items are, you don't need to worry about it. if you very seldom are going to face that risk, then it's okay to leave it in the contract. That's the last bullet point. Likely there will be items in the contract that you would rather not see there, but are there, but are important to the other party. So work together with that party and get those back and forth. And I could probably write a whole section of contract etiquette on how do you negotiate a contract. I've seen other ways of doing it, but if you circulate this back and forth in a Microsoft Word, it's easy to do a track changes in Microsoft Word, or the legal counsel may have their own program that they redline these. Take that contract and the first time identify all the issues. Don't identify five issues. There's actually companies that will reject that. If you didn't identify it the first go around, you cannot bring it up later on. So identify all the issues the first time you go through, and then send that back to them in a red line, give them some time. And then many times, the second go around or so, it's just now good to jump on a Zoom call or a conference call and talk through whatever is still left. So you'll identify all the issues the first time, and then go back through and whittle those away until you've got an acceptable agreement for both parties. So why is paperwork so important? Does it take the paperwork to do the job or to run the company? Well, many times it actually doesn't really. That actually doesn't do the machining or build the house or pour the concrete or whatever it is. So it's easy to let those things take the back burner. But don't let them take the back burner. They're pretty important. They can become extremely important, and so do them in a timely manner, especially at the start when everybody's agreeing. Get those in place. The issues can be uncomfortable to deal with. You think it's always comfortable to sit down and work through the minimum requirements of a partner in a company? No, it's not comfortable, but it does not get more comfortable as time goes on. Those are better times to deal with it, so take care of it, and take care of it while the iron is hot. But I've heard the statement that contracts are just for people who don't trust each other, and that's just not the truth. Agreements are made to clarify things and to alleviate conflict and to deter, to expedite the peace. And so if you have a business, then please don't let this take the back burner. I've seen way too many partnerships dissolve into chaos because things change and the proper things are not in place to alleviate that conflict. I've moved on a little bit faster than what I had anticipated, so it looks like I still have a little bit of time. So I'm just going to go back and talk a little bit about these other agreements that I mentioned in passing. I thought I'd made a list for myself here so that if I did have time, I could talk about that a little bit. But on employment agreements, every employee should have an employee agreement. You should have a standard employee agreement, whether it's an hourly employee or not. The basic understanding should be on that. And there are actually legal requirements to that as well. If you're an audited company, you'll be required to keep certain documents in place. Then if you go and hire executive level employees, where there is larger compensations and maybe commissions that are tied to that, that are based to certain things, you just want to have an agreement in place that defines that. How do you align with especially an executive employee? How do you align that agreement? How do you negotiate that back and forth, especially on somebody that is at the executive level? Like I said, just align with them on the value that they bring to the company. Whatever is within their sphere of control, bonus them according to that. Whatever they contribute, give them that, and then execute an agreement accordingly, so that things are clear and concise, and that there's no questions when the time comes to deal with that. Subcontracts, If you have other contractors that are doing specialty trades, do give them a subcontractor agreement that's going to give clear requirements to them, and so that if substandard performance is seen, then you have a basis to at least enforce that, or if you termination can be legitimate. So give them a subcontract with appendixes to that, which will have maybe their scope of work, maybe their proposal. Many times those are the best ways to do it, is if there's a proposal that they have provided to you that gives a lot of detail to what their scope of work is, if they have a proposal, like I said, you should have one, then the best way to do it is simply label that as an appendix to the contract and attach that to it where it is included by reference. And that should maybe include the schedule, and it should include inclusions, exclusions, provisions, scope of work. All those things are many times are already defined in that. Maybe it's a bid package, maybe it is a proposal, or both. Those can both be just added to the contract. And in our situation, we would have substantial subcontractors. And so we had a template agreement that our attorney wrote up, and we would just use that and modify that. Again, use the same process back and forth as what you do with other contracts. What about if there is private investments, private loans? If you you've asked somebody for a loan, if I ask Brother John for a loan because my company is in tight times, and you have a handshake agreement because you're a friend, that's probably not sufficient. You should have a pretty detailed agreement with that, especially if there if you take them in as a partner, and then go through the whole process of making them a real partner, not just a shareholder that's kind of on the outside. So so right, if I'm kind of out of stuff, Arlene, we good? Okay. Well, thank you, everybody. Lord bless you as you go through these and navigate your own personal professional journey with whoever your partners are, and practice the golden rule as you do so. Apply the things that we heard from our other speakers and the basic concepts of a Christian, and we trust that it could be a productive experience for you. Thank you.